Hi, friends, and welcome to Reading Jewish History in the Parsha, where each week we share an idea on the Parsha and how it relates to Jewish history, along with the books and articles I've read over Shabbos to learn more about the subject. And a reminder to sign up for our weekly Substack, readingjewishhistoryintheparsha.substack.com, where you'll get a weekly email of our class, along with all the links to the articles and books that I've discovered on my Shabbos reading journeys. Thank you so much to our sponsors and friends, Janet and Lior Hode and family, with immense gratitude to Hashem. When God introduces himself to Moshe, he makes a promise. There will be slavery in Egypt, God says, but I will take the Jewish people out of slavery with an outstretched hand, Bizroa Netuya. Notably, four different languages of redemption are used. In one verse, God uses the term Hotzeitzi, Vihitzalti, Vigaalti, and in the next verse, God uses the term Vilakachti. These four verbs have become memorialized, as we all know, during the Passover Seder, on the Pesach Seder. Each of the four languages of redemption parallels a different glass of wine we drink at the Seder. The Talmud Yerushalmi is actually explicit about this, even though the Talmud Bavli never quite clearly states why we drink four cups of wine at the Seder. It's the Talmud Yerushalmi that states in one of the opinions that the reason why we drink four cups at the Seder is to parallel these four languages, the Dal Lashonos of Geula. Of course, the following verse that comes after it has a fifth term, Vehevesi. Some have convincingly argued that this is the basis of the Kos Shel Eliyahu. You'll check out, we have the links, of course, in the Substack to a wonderful post on the Svarim blog. They've written so much about the Kos Shel Eliyahu. It's absolutely fascinating. And over there, the fifth cup may correspond to the fifth language of redemption. But why do we have so many languages for redemption? Certainly, it would have been easier to have one. Pesach Seder would have been a lot more sober. And secondly, why don't we drink the fifth cup? We have the corresponding language of redemption. Why is only the fifth cup not drinking? And finally, the response of the Jewish people to Moshe's report of God's promise with all these languages of redemption is simply shocking. They don't listen. The Torah explains that they were too overburdened with hard work. But still, Moshe brought redemptive tidings from God that they will be redeemed. Surely, even a hard day at work should not prevent the Jewish people from celebrating such news. How can it be that they didn't listen to Moshe? To understand all of this, let's examine the enduring question of how to describe the establishment of the state of Israel. On Monday, September 20th, 1948, 4 months after the establishment of the state of Israel, a small article ran in the newspaper entitled Tfila L'Shalom Medinat Yisroel, a prayer for the peace of the state of Israel. The article provided a text for a standard prayer for the state of Israel. With some minor variations, this is the same prayer used in synagogues today. A lot of variations and a lot to discuss there. The prayer, as the article notes, was written by the chief rabbis of Israel, Rav Yitzchak Herzog, who's the second chief rabbi after Rav Kook, and Rav Benzion Uziel, with a thank you note, interestingly enough, to the famed poet Shai Agnon, who, as the chief rabbis acknowledged in the article, helped edit the final text. Ultimately, the text was mostly written by Rav Herzog. The prayer at the time, and in many ways to this day, remains controversial. The state of Israel is referred to as Reshit Smichat Geula Tenu, the beginnings of the flowerings of redemption. I'm going to try to use Havara Svardit, which I don't normally use, but I feel weird when I talk about the state of Israel and all this stuff, and I'm using my Ashkenazis tone. So I'm sure my children's teachers will be happy. That's an ongoing debate my children's homework, because I'm always using my Ashkenazit Havara that I thankfully learned in South Shore. Thank you to my South Shore friends, Team Nusach Ashkenaz. But the question is, was the establishment of the state of Israel really the beginning of redemption? When the chief rabbinate in Britain, led by Rabbi Israel Broidy, composed their own prayer for the state of Israel, they omitted these words. In fact, most Siddurim at the time did not include the prayer of the chief rabbinate. The term itself, Reshit Smichat Gulatenu, was seen by many as theological hubris and somewhat foreign. The phrase Reshit Smichat Gulatenu does not appear anywhere in Tanakh or Talmud, though Tzmicha, as describing the Geula, certainly does have a foundation in Tanakh. As Rabbi Dr. Jacob J. Schachter notes in his introduction to the Koran Machzor for Yom HaTzmaut and Yom Yerushalayim, didn't think they had that, but they do, and it has a phenomenal essay, I think it's in the beginning, it might be at the end, from Rabbi J.J. Schachter. The phrase seems to derive from the writings of Rav Kook, the first chief rabbi Rabbi of Israel. Rabbi Schachter should just note, thanks, an earlier work that I just want to mention here called Politics and Prayer, Jewish Prayers for the Government and State of Israel by Joel Rappel, who seems to be like the leading scholar on how this came about. Rav Kook never uses the exact phrase Reshit Smichas Gulatenu, though he uses and includes versions with slight variations. Reshit Smichat Yeshuot Yisroel, Reshit Smichas Geulat Amenu. In a fascinating 1917 letter to Lord Walter Rothschild, Rav Kook thanks him for his instrumental role securing the Balfour Declaration. The Balfour Declaration was written to Lord Rothschild from Britain's Foreign Secretary Arthur Balfour, which announced British support for a national home for the Jewish people. Rav Kook thanked him for the realization of our national longing. I'll read a little bit of it in Hebrew because it's so beautiful. He writes, "May rov rigshe simchasi al haskamasa ha'adina shel memshelas Britannia. I am just so overwhelmed with joy on the agreement of the British government. Yorum hoda al hagshamas tikvasenu halumit, the realization of our national longing." And then he writes, "Vahazchus hagadol hazeh, this great merit, besuras reishis hatzad shel tzmichas keren Yeshuas Yisroel. Reishis hatzad shel tzmichas keren Yeshuas Yisroel." Rav Kook thanks him not only for the realization of our national longing, but the flowering of the substance of Israel's salvation. That's how I translate it. Rav Kook is very hard to translate. Even within the Zionist world, the phrase was not accepted by all. Religious anti-Zionists, which we'll have to discuss a different time, obviously objected, but I want to focus on within the Zionist world. In 1968, the Lubavitcher Rebbe wrote a letter to his friend, a fellow Chabad Chassid, Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin. It is almost criminal, I need to mention this, and I even wrote this in the Substack because I'm hoping somebody pays attention. I don't hear from you guys. You guys should reach out. Whoever's listening to this, reach out. Let me know that you're paying attention, that you're listening, or that there's a pulse here. But I did include this. It is almost criminal that we don't have a comprehensive biography of Rav Zevin. He and Rav Menachem Kasher are two figures for which we desperately need biography. So I'm calling out a call to action. We need a biography on Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin, and we need a biography on Rav Menachem Kasher. Neither of whom we're going to get into their biographies in a substantive way right now. Rav Zevin, of course, was the first editor of Encyclopedia Talmudit, a generational scholar, one of the most beautiful, eloquent writers in Hebrew, accessible Hebrew, dare I say, almost an easy Hebrew. I read his Mo'adim B'Halacha every single year before Yom Tov. It's my number one Sefer recommendation. But aside from that, he was also an outspoken Zionist. The Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, reached out to him, noticeably approaching the sensitive subject very delicately and sensitively, discussing the idea that the state of Israel represents the beginning of redemption. Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin had roots in Chabad. I wouldn't call him a chassid of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He was a chassid of Chabad, which was actually a breakoff, not a breakoff. Lubavitch is a form, a type of Chabad community. We can't get into all the details there. Rav Zevin, I believe, was older than the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I think he was born in 1888. The Lubavitcher Rebbe was born in, I'm guessing, 1903. I should look it up. I have a computer in front of me, but I want to keep going because this is a fascinating letter. When two people connect, the Lubavitcher Rebbe wrote to Rav Zevin, quoting their mutual friend and a fellow Chabad Chassid as well, Zalman Shazar, the third president of Israel, they should try to find common ground that unifies them rather than emphasize their differences. So the Rebbe was being very delicate in this letter. Still, the Rebbe explains, he finds the term Atchalta de Geula to describe the state of Israel as dangerous. Sakana, that's the word he uses, dangerous. The Rebbe invokes previous false messiahs as a cautionary tale for people to think of before they immediately describe the establishment of the state of Israel as having messianic significance. Rav Zevin, of course, took a different approach. In his classic work Mo'adim B'Halacha, he has a section on contemporary mourning for the land of Israel. When he mentions the state of Israel, he actually adds, Ashreinu Shezachinu, how praiseworthy that we merited to have a state of Israel. And interestingly, as Rabbi Dr. J.J. Schachter points out in his classic article, Facing the Truths of History, we'll do a deep dive in that one day, these lines were excised, taken out from the 1981 Art Scroll English translation. They took out the words Ashreinu Shezachinu Lakach, describing the state of Israel. Questions of the messianic nature of the state of Israel continue to simmer. Following the narrow victory of Israel during the Yom Kippur War, many Zionists began to question if in fact the state could be characterized as messianic. The anxiety and vulnerability surrounding Israel after the Yom Kippur War felt more exilic than redemptive. In a fashion fascinating 1974 exchange in the journal Shema. It's a fascinating journal. It was interdenominational. People from all denominations were writing in Shema. I don't know why it wasn't controversial. Like, real serious people. I think Rav J.D. Bleich wrote in Shema. We don't have a journal like that today. I wish we did. I don't know who could start something like that without getting into trouble. But in 1974, everyone was writing in Shema. And two rabbis, Rabbi Schubert Spiro, I believe he's a Canadian rabbi, and you'll know the second name, Rabbi Norman Lamb, both Zionists, debated the merits of messianic expectations for Israel. Rabbi Lamb wrote a second confession that I urge upon those whose guilt is now exposed. Al chet. He uses the words al chet for the sin of premature messianism, specifically referencing the phrase atchalta de geula. Rabbi Lamb cautions against theological hubris that leads to a cockiness about Israel's power. Rabbi Schubert Spiro did not back down. He writes, "When the state of Israel was established in 1948, many of us believe that we entered an era of atchalta de geula, the beginning of messianic redemption. Our conviction that we are now living in an era of incipient messianic redemption was strengthened and confirmed by the wars of 1956 and especially 1967, and the recent Yom Kippur War did nothing to shake our belief." Rabbi Lamb again responded to Rabbi Spiro's article by clarifying that he doesn't deny that Israel could be the beginning of redemption. He just doesn't know. As Rabbi Lamb writes, "I must make clear that I do not deny that ours is an era of incipient messianic redemption. What I am saying is that I do not know whether it is or not, and that I challenge the certainty of those who assert such superior knowledge. I consider it spiritually presumptuous to declare without benefit of prophetic inspiration that we are privy to divine secrets. God's plans are known to us only retrospectively." Rabbi Ari Berman, current president of Yeshiva University, wrote about the exchange between Rabbi Spiro and Lamb in a tradition article entitled "Religious Zionism, Moving History Forward." Rabbi Berman correctly notes that their debate is not just about the state of Israel, but how we should relate to historical consciousness in general. Is it part of the Jewish responsibility to listen and decipher God's messages as imparted through history itself? Rav Kook was certainly convinced he saw God's redemption before his eyes. In a moving 1918 letter, he writes to his student Moshe Seidel, "Yes, the beginning of redemption, Atchalta de Geula, is certainly going and unfolding before us." In the original Hebrew, he writes, "Kein, Atchalta de Geula, vadai holeches umofia lifanenu." It's a beautiful letter. You should read the entire thing inside. Again, it's in Igros Raya, the letters of Rav Kook, Tuf Ayin Aleph. That's 871. A very beautiful letter about redemption and the emerging state of Israel. Such positions are not surprising coming from Rav Kook, but perhaps the most surprising voice who emphatically believes in the messianic nature of the state of Israel is Rav Herschel Schechter, Rosh Yeshiva and Yeshiva University. In a lengthy article written in his work Be'ikve Hatzon, in the 32nd essay, Rav Schechter, couched in characteristically traditional sources, writes explicitly that the state of Israel is the Atchalta de Geula, and he notes that this term, Atchalta de Geula, does actually appear in the Talmud. You could look it up in Megillah, Yud Zayin Amud Beis, 17b, as opposed to the phrase Reshit Tzmichat Geulatenu, which, as we mentioned, while the word Tzmicha as a reference to redemption does exist in Tanakh, the phrase Reshit Tzmichat Geulatenu is not something that appears in the Talmud as a phrase, but Atchalta de Geula does. We are promised, Rav Schechter explains, basing himself on the words of the Ramban in Sefer Bamidbar, that there will only be two destructions, two chorbanos, the destruction of the first and second Beis HaMikdash, the first and second temples in Jerusalem. This promise applies, he explains, to established Jewish governments as well. So the state of Israel, we are promised, will never be completely destroyed. Redemption, in some form, has already begun. Redemption is not binary. Between the world of exile and redemption, there's a space in between. This is why Rav Baruch HaLevi Epstein explains in his Torah Temima, we have four languages for redemption. In fact, as Rav Epstein points out, the Talmud Yerushalmi doesn't even use the term Dalad Lashonos Shel Geula, four languages of redemption, but it just says Dalad Geulos, four redemptions, because the ultimate redemption unfolds in stages. It's a process. We use these terms to establish the four cups of wine at the Pesach Seder in order to recognize that each stage along the process, even without the ultimate redemption, is worthy of celebration and recognition. The Jewish people, however, could not imagine this process of redemption. They were impatient, as Ripchandra Fall Hirsch explains. The intensity of their slavery prevented them from having the bandwidth to bear a slowly unfolding redemption. They were so mired in exile, Rav Meir Simchov Devince explains in his Meshech Chachma, they could not even imagine the promises of redemption. When you're so broken under the yoke of slavery, all you want is for that yoke to disappear. But the actual realization of redemption, the Meshech Chachma explains, is something they simply could not fathom. This is perhaps why the fifth word, Vehevesi, used for redemption, is only memorialized in the Kos Shel Eliyahu, the cup of Elijah. Only when Eliyahu arrives and confirms that the final redemption has arrived, will we be finally able to drink from the fifth cup as well. Until then, we take solace that the process has begun, we pour the fifth cup, and await Eliyahu to finally drink. So thank you again for listening to Reading Jewish History in the Parsha. To get the links to all the articles and books mentioned, be sure to subscribe to our weekly Substack, readingjewishhistoryintheparsha.substack.com. Thank you again to our sponsors, Jana and Lior Hode and family, with immense gratitude to Hashem. Thank you so much for listening, and keep reading each and every Shabbos.